Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is episode 585, and I'm going to be talking about Justice League Dark Wonder Woman number one. This is the second one-shot in this Witching Hour story, and it brings it all to a close. So I'm going to go through the issue and kind of give a breakdown of what happens, but I'm also going to be giving commentary about the overall story thus far and give my thoughts on, you know, just how it's going to affect Wonder Woman, or how I think it's going to affect Wonder Woman, the choices that Tynan made in the story, the significance. So it's going to be a commentary on more than just what you see in this particular issue. Although I did find that, and I've heard this complaint from some other people, that this was a really dialogue-heavy event overall, and particularly this issue. There's the whole theory of show me, don't tell me, right? So let the art do the speaking for itself. But I think James really wanted to kind of hammer home some of these points and make sure that people really understood the significance of what was going on. So I think it was a case of him wanting to show people and tell people to just kind of reinforce. But it is a dense read, but I think ultimately it's a good event, and it's really raised the bar as far as the magical corner of the DC universe, which I think is a corner of the DC universe which oftentimes gets forgotten. It seems like people pay attention to it when there's really good titles coming out with, you know, name creators. So when Swamp Thing is doing really well in sales, or John Constantine Hellblazer, or Neil Gaiman Sandman, you know, we have the Sandman universe coming back right now, Books of Magic, and the other title, Lucifer, another one, The Dreaming, I think, and I can't remember the last one, House of Mystery, maybe? But anyway, when titles like that are doing really well, I think that's when people are paying attention to the magical corner of the DCU. Otherwise, I think sometimes it gets sort of forgotten. And when you start talking about titles like that, especially the stuff that ties into Sandman, that's almost a subsection of the magical part of the DCU, right? I mean, it's not that there's not a place for that. It's not that those aren't good stories. But when you think about the classic stuff, you know, the classic House of Mystery, Tales of or House, what was it? It's House of Mystery, House of Suspense? What's the other one? House of Secrets. That's what I'm trying to remember. And also Tales of the Unexpected is another classic one. You know, like the 60s and 70s stuff that was really rooted in horror and mystery and magic, but it still had a part to play in the overall DC universe rather than being kind of separate, you know, because I really do consider that Sandman stuff to be kind of separate, which is why it was such a big deal when Sandman showed up in the DC Dark Knights Metal event. So anyway, I think that Tynan, more so than any writer in recent memory, has done a great job of bringing magic to the forefront, showing why it's so important in the DCU. And it brings me to my one nitpick about the story. And again, I am completely picking nits here because I thought the story was spectacular. I just wonder about the timing. I feel like starting with the story would have made a little bit more sense in the Justice League Dark kind of narration, right? So start with the Witching Hour, you know, have Wonder Woman, Justice League Dark number one. That one shot could have still been a one shot, and then led into the first issue of Justice League Dark, if that makes sense. And then seeing everything that went on in the Witching Hour with Hecate, we could have then, that could have been kind of the catalyst that caused the magical users in the DCU to realize, hey, magic is broken, and then go on your way to tell the story. I think I know why they did it the other way around. I think I have a couple of theories, and it may be, you know, it's not necessarily one or the other, but maybe a combination of both. I'll touch on that. I'll just tell you right now, which is I think maybe they loved the idea of the finale of this Justice League Dark Wonder Woman event, Witching Hour, they love the idea of the finale coming out on Halloween. That could have been something that they really loved. But again, you could have messed with the release date. You know, you could have, you know, pushed it back, could have massaged things around and got it to be released that way anyway, even if you didn't have those first three issues of Justice League Dark before the event started. Because I just think it would have worked better, because the first two issues of Justice League Dark, while they were good, three knocked it out of the park. Three was amazing. And then it's not that we lost momentum, but we just shifted gears. Like issue one built to issue two, built to issue three, which was completely surprising to me just how good it was and how it really like raised the stakes. And we, you know, found out who the big bad was, like saw what he was capable of. And it was just so impactful that I think having this story right here kind of lessens the impact somewhat. Whereas I think there was a way to tell this story first, we could have got a cameo from the big bad here. It would have been almost a little more shocking to see him show up and like, whoa, what, you know, what's that? And then you go into the story that was told in the first three issues, and then you're left with that incredible third issue, which wouldn't have been the third issue then, you know, it would have been whatever, issue five or six or whatever it is. And then, you know, you'd have that momentum to build on, you know, with the next part of the story. So I think it works this way too. It's fine this way. I just wonder if it wouldn't have been more impactful to go the other way. I'd be curious to talk to James Tynan about what his thoughts would have been on kind of switching around the timeline a little bit. But anyway, let me go ahead and dive into this issue here. And I'll talk a little bit more about my thoughts on the series overall, as I mentioned. So first of all, let me give the creative team. It's written by the aforementioned James Tynan. We've got art by Jesus Moreno, Fernando Blanco, and Miguel Mondoca. Colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. Letters by Rob Lay. We've got cover by David Yarden and variant cover by Ricardo Federici. And the story starts off, and as I mentioned, it does have quite a bit of exposition in it. So we're getting exposition right off the start with Madame Xanadu realizing that something is extremely wrong with magic. Like magic has been broken, but now all of a sudden it's even beyond that. Etrigan, the demon, is feeling the same way. And I do love that Tynan is touching on these other magical users, right? So it's like, it's almost like a preview. Like I'm expecting to see all these characters show up soon in the pages of Justice League Dark, which again, I love. I love that we're going to have a traditional superhero comic, which I consider Justice League Dark, even though it has its foot in the magical world. It's like, it's straddling, right? It's straddling the superheroes and the magical world, and it's bringing it together and reminding us that, hey, there are these superheroes whose powers are based on magic, and they are a part of the superhero universe too. And, you know, that's why I love that we're getting characters like Etrigan and Solomon Grundy and Eclipso and Madame Xanadu who really have their powers based in the magical realm, but have showed up in so many traditional superhero comics. Like that's what we need to get back to. And I think it makes the DC universe feel more well-rounded, and it opens up more avenue for story. So I don't know. I think maybe we get lost in the science fiction aspect of the superhero universe sometimes. And it's fun to look at the supernatural and spiritual side as well. So as I said, first issue, we're seeing Madame Xanadu realize something's really wrong with magic, even beyond what was already broken. Etrigan as well. Eclipso's feeling the intricate taut webs of order snapping like piano wires as he laughs cruelly from his black diamond prison. And Solomon Grundy lets out a moan. His body started to die, right? And that's simply not supposed to happen. And then perhaps most important of all, as we saw early in the issue, Naboo, who has come to the forefront and taken over as Dr. Fate, rather than just being a part of the helm and sitting in you know, the back. We see him kind of crossed the line, so to speak. He's high above the world watching with cold interest, waiting to see if the dark road that he predicts, if that's really what's going to happen as he feels the earth scream. So again, I love that Tynan is showing us that, man, things are not going well, and beyond magic being broken and seeing parts of the dark multiverse leak in, now this is far and away worse, right? Hecate is taking over magic for herself. So as we turn the page, Swamp Thing feels it too. You know, the Parliament of Trees has been destroyed by Black Orchid, who was being controlled by Hecate, and that's the source of his power, right? And now the only voice he feels through the green is his own echoing back. And what's that going to do to his powers, and what does that mean for him? Meanwhile, he has Black Orchid wrapped up in his vines, and she's screaming, saying, "Stop hurting me. I didn't do this. It was Hecate using me." And Swamp Thing saying that the pain is not in your body. It's in the world of magic. You've mortally wounded the green. The Parliament of Trees is gone. And Black Orchid's crying. She's like, "I didn't mean to do any of this." And Swamp Thing clearly angry. Well, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you meant to do it or not. The green will die. But then there's a voice, a new voice of the green saying, "No, swamp creature, the green will change. It will adapt. It will become something new and worthy of this world." And we see some exotic flowers start manifesting themselves, start growing up out of the scorched earth, saying that there's going to be a new beautiful garden paradise, and it's going to spring forth from the ashes of what was before. And it's going to remind the world of nature's might. And that the will of our the will of this green is of their mistress Hecate. So on the following page, it's a great visual. These flowers look menacing. They look dangerous, as they all have little mouths opening with their stamen coming out, and they're telling Swamp Thing that for the Parliament of Flowers to grow, the old must be pruned away. Right. And the Parliament of Trees itself is gone, but Swamp Thing still remains, and he's part of the old green. So it's clearly a very overt threat. Meanwhile, at the Oblivion Bar, Manitou Dawn is there. And much like Black Orchid, she had previously been a vessel for a shard of Hecate's magic, and had killed people in the bar. And as there are a few survivors there that managed to escape the city that was being destroyed last issue, Detective Chimpa approaches her and says, "Are you going to try to kill us again?" And Manitou Dawn's like, "No." Detective Chimp's like, "Well, then, yeah, we can hear you. So how did you get rid of Hecate?" "Had you shake her?" he says. And Manitou Dawn says, I didn't shake her. I was shaken from her. The actions of your friends in Nanda Parbat managed to change the game for a moment." And again, that's where they all escaped from. We see Dead Man there. We see Man Bat, Tracy 13, among others. And Manitou Dawn goes on to say, it didn't happen soon enough, though. Magic has already changed hands. The magic of the world was broken, and now, because of that, because of what's been going on and Hecate kind of reemerging, she's managed to take magic back. All the magic is hers. She runs magic on in this version, in this universe of the multiverse now. And she tells Manbat to try the door. "I think you'll find she's locked us out of the equation. The Oblivion Bar no longer even has access to the hallways of magic, if you will, to be able to travel from place to place." And she goes on to say that if Black Orchid was released as well, then both of the power that Manitou Dawn and Black Orchid had will have gone into the next active host, which would be Wonder Woman. And Manitou Dawn says that the body will bear that power until it burns out, and then the power will at last return to Hecate. And there's a very poignant picture of Detective Chimp there, because he immediately realizes who that is. And that's Wonder Woman. That's Diana. And you can tell he's very worried. Meanwhile, in Nanda Parbat, we see that power has indeed flowed into Wonder Woman. And she's charged up as she never has been before, while Zatanna and Constantine look on. And they're thinking, well, our plan didn't exactly go the way that we hoped, right? And Constantine's, I'd wager she's more powerful in this moment than any god that's ever walked the earth. She could blink us out of existence if she wanted. And there's a great panel there of John and Zatanna, who have shared a romantic relationship in the past, grasping hands. They're clearly worried. One thing that has happened to Wonder Woman is Hecate has, and we saw this in the last part of the story, Hecate has really exerted her control over Wonder Woman, right? She's completely purged her of her own self, right? The heroic part of herself. And she seems to be a puppet at this point. And you can only feel the strength of that hold Hecate has over Wonder Woman strengthening now that even more of Hecate's power is being channeled through Wonder Woman. And we see Wonder Woman call out to Hecate saying, "What would you have me do with these two who stood against our rise?" And Hecate, with a very malevolent grin, is saying, our great work is nearly complete. So leave them. They'll learn the new meaning of death soon enough. And the ground starts to shake, and Zatanna's saying, I got a bad feeling about this. She probably didn't let us go out of the kindness of her heart. And then as a vast new temple thrust up out of the ruins of Nanda Parbat into the roiling, turbulent skies above, Zatanna's asking what's happening. And John says, well, I don't think her redecoration of Nanda Parbat was quite finished. She still needs a magical heart of the afterlife here on Earth. But she just wanted it to be her own, right? She didn't want it to be what Nanda Parbat was. She wanted to create it as she saw fit. And as that temple rises up out of the ground, we see what looks to be some type of hawk spirit. It's got six eyes. It looks like it has hawk wings. It's carrying a scythe. And it says, you stand at the gates of the great necropolis facing the judgment of the ultra psychopomp. And Constantine and Zatanna, please allow me to show you to your graves. Clearly, that's not good. When we turn the page, we're now in the collective unconscious. So we know this is where Wonder Woman went when she died, or at least the part of her that was forced out of her own vessel, her own body by Hecate. And as she's looking on, Witchfire is there as well. She was the other person that was a vessel for the last piece of Hecate's power. Hecate kept a piece of it for herself. Another was in Witchfire, another was in Wonder Woman, another in Black Orchid, another in Manitou Dawn, so five pieces. And now Wonder Woman's got four of them, I suppose, or at least three. Perhaps Hecate has two. But technically, you would think that Wonder Woman, having three-fifths of the power is even more powerful than Hecate right now. But meanwhile, they're in this collective unconscious, and Witchfire's saying, at least the end is beautiful, right? In its horrible kind of way. And you can't deny that we've got the best seats in the house for the death of magic as they know it, as they're looking on the earth. Because when they're in this collective unconscious, and it very much resembles the moon, and they're looking out across space at the earth, and it's being blasted by a beam that's literally changing magic. That's this power is transferring it over to Hecate. And Wonder Woman, for her part, says, I don't really share your enthusiasm, Witchfire. I don't feel a need to relish the destruction that's happening. I've got to find a way to stop it. Black Orchid and Manitou Dawn are gone, as you say. And so that means they've been severed from the power of the Witch Mark. Witchfire agrees, says, yeah, if they were dead, they'd be here with us. So they lost the power of Hecate, but they're still among the living. And so Wonder Woman says, you're right. And the power racing through my body is preventing my mind, my consciousness from returning to life. But I can't just sit here and watch, knowing what Hecate is doing to the world. So you yourself said that this place is kind of a metaphor. It's Hecate's subconscious of magic. And we're not going to find any answers unless we get deeper into that unconscious. And so she decides to dive into a pool of water that's there, a lake. And as she does, she's hoping that this plunge into the Stygian darkness is for the best, right? Because she's worried that the tide itself has already turned. So as she swims down, she feels like she's swimming forever. And she has to tell her aching limbs to keep going. She has to tell herself that this isn't real and she doesn't need to breathe, right? This is all metaphor. This is all, metaphysical, and it's not the physical world. So even though her lungs ache for air, she tells herself she doesn't have to breathe. And eventually she gets down to the point where fear is starting to overtake her, and she hits the bottom, and it seems impenetrable even for her powers. And she's worried that that Witchfire lied, that this place is real in some respect, and she did need to breathe, and she truly was swimming through water. It was a physical world. And so as she's hammering at the barrier, she sees something on the other side, something like very much like a reflection, and a friendly hand pulls her through the barrier toward what feels like air. And it's a small child on the other side, and she thanks the child and asks what place she has come to and who this child is. And the child says, well, you know the answer to that question because you knew it as soon as you dived in. I am Hecate, and you must listen carefully if you're to survive. So meanwhile, at the newly formed Parliament of Flowers, Swamp Thing is fighting as best he can because he's being prevented from entering the green. He's got no control over the vegetation there, and the Parliament of Flowers is attacking him and Black Orchid. Meanwhile, at the great necropolis that Hecate has just raised and what used to be Nanda Parbat, Constantine and Zatanna are fighting the skeletal army that Hecate has raised. And in the Oblivion Bar, Tracy 13 is talking to Manitou Dawn, trying to figure out how they can all escape. She's saying, well, maybe we can move through the shadow dimensions. And Manitou Dawn's worried about being, what if Hecate senses them there and traps them there? They'd be trapped in a world with no light for eternity. And as they're arguing about that, Detective Chimp says, hey, ladies, how about if we just walk through the door that just popped up in the middle of the room, right? I mean, any place has got to be better than here. I mean, maybe not, right? I mean, what if they do end up in the shadow realm and Hecate does lock them there forever, but they're willing to give it a shot, right? Meanwhile, a similar door opens in front of Zatanna and Constantine as they're running from the skeleton army. And Zatanna's asking John if he thinks it's a good idea to run through the door. And John's response is, I think not dying is a very good idea. So again, I don't know where it's going, but any place has got to be better than here. And meanwhile, Black Orchid and Swamp Thing see a third door appear near them, with Black Orchid urging Swamp Thing to come through because there's no help left there, right? They're going to be overrun by the Parliament of Flowers. They have no ability to control any vegetation, and the Parliament of Flowers clearly wants to eradicate anything left of the old green. So as all three groups go through the door, they end up in Aea, which is the realm of Cersei, and she's not real happy with them. She's like, man, you guys really made a mess of things, haven't you? And Zatanna's like, Cersei, how did you... She's like, look, we don't have time for this, so let me tell you what's going on. You don't trust me, and you think it was foolish to allow Diana to think that using Hecate's powers against Hecate herself would work, and you're scared enough you're going to fixate on that, you know, maybe the mistake that was made or belief in Diana, but you've got to admit the truth. And the truth is that you're losing. Hecate has already replaced two core pillars of magic with their own. Life and death belong to her. Nature belongs to her. And at this point, how much magic that encompasses. She's ready to rewrite the books of magic herself as she wants. And once she knocks out the third pillar, the system's going to fall apart completely, right? She's after the sphere of the gods, the dimensional home where all spirits and godly energy lives in the multiverse. And if she takes hold there, the magic that holds all magical beings together in the DCU, they're all going to die. Or the best case scenario, your magic's going to be rewritten and you won't die, but you're going to be rewritten with Hecate's magic. You will belong to her. And so what needs to happen is you gotta take your last stand, right? Give me something I can work with, is what Detective Chimp is saying. You know, there are thousands of gates, spheres of the gods, any temple where any human has worshipped, like, so how do we know which one? And Circe says, I thought you're supposed to be a detective. Think of the mythology in play here. And then it becomes obvious, right? Where would Circe go? Where would Wonder Woman with this power of Hecate go? Obviously, it's Mount Olympus. And as the page turns, we see that is indeed where Wonder Woman is. She's walking up the mountain and we see vegetation growing behind her. Again, a nod to the fact that Circe controls the green. She controls the magic of nature. And we get more exposition about the witch mark burning brighter than ever before on Wonder Woman's forehead, as if the power of the earth itself is coming out of each step that Wonder Woman takes as she climbs the mountain and rips open the gates of Olympus. It is empty, right? The gods had not long since abandoned their post. And if they were still there, they obviously would have leapt into action to defend their home. But there's no one around, right? In this hidden place. And it's going to give Hecate's power over magic a chance to be absolute, right? She doesn't have to fight to take over this last pillar of magic. Meanwhile, in that realm where Wonder Woman has met the childlike Hecate, this is another aspect. Because remember, Hecate is the three faces, right? The old crone, the young girl, and the middle-aged magic user, right? The kind of the default Hecate. So the childlike Hecate says, you know, there's much for you to still understand, but there's so little time. So let me tell you what's going on from my perspective. You've been cast in a great drama, and your job is to bring it to a close, but you've got to understand the story in full. And again, we get a lot of exposition, and she's explaining in the beginning there was magic and it was raw and it was burgeoning. And I myself was created at the same time as the still forming multiverse, right? And some would call what was forming around me at that same time the spear of the gods. But really the story started long before the gods, when life was new and the first beings were being dreamt of. And from that first incredible light, the first magic being shaped out of the cosmos. And I was there for that. But it wasn't long before I sensed that I wasn't alone in the dark. There was another sphere below me, a darker other place tied to that darker other multiverse. And in the panel here, we see Hecate and an upside down reflection of another side of the coin of a being that was also formed at this beginning of time. Maybe think of it as the dark opposite number of Hecate, and it's the upside down man, right? And she says, as I was formed from light, he was formed from darkness, upside down, staring up at here, and was frightened and created a barrier beneath her feet to hide him away. Didn't want this horror to sully the beautiful realm that she felt. And so the horrible creature was out of her mind, and she began to visit the earth, the center of the new multiverse, and watched humanity grow and would give them touches of magic here or there to delight them, to astound them, to show them the possibilities of their world. And they gave her a name. They gave me a name, and the name was Hecate, because they believed that I lived in the moon above them. And as humanity grew, its beliefs grew in tandem, and there were realms beginning to splinter off, and there were new forms and great houses and pantheons and incredible gods that had their own mystery and power. And each of those gods had their own beliefs and their own creation myths. And they thought that Hecate was a subsidiary to their story, right? That she, part of her power came from the belief that they came first and she was formed of them. And Hecate allowed them to believe that because it amused her to do so, rather than, you know, lord her power over them and say, no, I was here first. I was here much before you. So Hecate changed at that point, right? She's the face of the new reality. And at that point, she could leave her kind of more mystical childhood behind. And she felt a responsibility to the new forms of magic and belief. And this was the maidenhood that gave way to the aspect of the mother, right? That default Hecate, as it were. And there were many offers made to her to woo her and incorporate Hecate into the belief systems of all these other gods. And ultimately, she agreed to take the hand of the Greek god of the underworld, Hades. And she was welcomed in Olympus, even by one as mighty as Zeus, because they recognized that her power was even greater than theirs. But they also expected her, or me, as Hecate is telling the story, that I would shape myself into their beliefs, into their godhood, into their mode, right? And become Hecate, goddess of magic. And, you know, my worshipers would worship me in the light of the silver moon. That was always kind of Hecate's purview, as it were. And it was that way for a long time in the age of man. And in Hecate's generosity, mankind noticed just how much power Hecate wielded, because her followers, her worshipers, were so much more powerful and gifted with so much more than the other gods, power beyond the gods that they worshipped, right? And so a lot of her followers sought the gift of magic to wield for themselves, and they would mimic incantations they witnessed from Hecate's visits to the crossroads, and they eventually managed to bind her in a circle, a fabrication of the moon itself. And these men didn't wish to be subservient to any gods. They wanted to take Hecate's power for their own. And so as years passed in captivity, where every day Hecate prayed to her fiance, Hades, to come and rescue her, because they had welcomed her with open arms and they had professed to love her so dearly, but there was never an answer. And then finally one day Hades came to her with a message. He'd found a new bride, the daughter of the nature goddess Persephone. And he said that the gods of Olympus had made a decision that Hecate was no longer welcome at their gates. And with that, he was gone. So even though they had welcomed her, they realized over the years that she was so much more powerful than them, and that Hecate herself was never going to conform to their ideas and be subservient to them and be less than them, because why should she? She's so much more powerful. She was here long before they were. And so they took this opportunity, with Hecate being trapped, to sever the ties and say, no, you're trapped. We're not worried about you anymore, and we're moving on. And so Hecate began to scream, and in her screams that threatened to tear apart the boundaries of the multiverse, she felt something that she had almost forgotten. She hadn't felt it in such a long time. And what she felt was that dark, upside-down mirror of her own great power, right? The upside-down man, the roiling, toxic and dangerous upside-down man who was so full of hate. So with all that might and fury, she reached through the veil of the multiverse into that dark dimension and found that dark double and pulled that piece of dark magic into the world, a magic that could threaten to corrode and destroy everything from the inside out, a contagious strain of power that could never possibly be contained. And so she gifted to her followers, with nothing but malice and hate in her heart, the aspect of her mother that was shed completely. And this was the third face of Hecate, the crone, right? Righteous hate incarnate because of how she was unjustly imprisoned by man, and she now had power to unleash on the world of man this dark, murderous hate. And so she would let the gods know her fury. She reminded them of her rightful place in the cosmos and that she was so much greater than them. And if they dared cross her again, she would use that power against them to destroy them. And she saw the fear in their eyes and knew that they understood. And she still wasn't sure that she completely trusted herself, though, because she had been imprisoned for such a long time. So she decided to break her power into five, and she hid it in those five young girls that I talked about before. And she would wait until the proper hour when no man or god could come and topple her from her throne. She would wait for the witching hour and make sure that then she would make her move, and no one would ever forget, and no one would ever imprison her or disrespect her again. So that hour never did come, and the fear festered inside of her, and she took her former aspects into herself as well, becoming the full embodiment of the triple goddess. She was all three, but the crone dominated. That was it was the last version of her, and the version that had taken even more power into herself by tapping into the dark multiverse. So the maiden and the mother were still aspects that could possibly push Hecate from time to time to bring blessings to the world and her worshipers. But she would always turn back to the dark magic that was infecting her. And so as this child version of Hecate is telling this story to Diana, Diana's like, I understand. And Hecate says, well, I'm sorry, but it's not enough to understand. Surviving what to come will take sacrifice. You've got to do more than just understand. So meanwhile, in Aea, Circe's telling everybody, look, there's no points in dancing around this. There's only one path left. You're going to have to kill Diana. And everybody's like, wait, what? Like, look, Wonder Woman or magic, you got to pick one. You know, stop pretending you have a choice. She's about to destroy the final pillar of traditional magic by destroying the home of the gods. And if you don't stop her by killing her, Hecate takes over. And Circe said, trust me, I would do it myself, but all the power that I have was granted to me by Hecate. And if I step onto the playing field, she'd just destroy me. And then where are we? She probably will anyway when she realizes that I've set you against Diana. But this has to be done. Horrors await, and Hecate is not going to make it easy. But all the power that Diana has trapped inside her right now, a killing blow is going to go off like an atomic bomb of magic. And that's our one chance to end Hecate's existence. There's not any other option, right? It's you got to choose the darkest path because it's the only one that's going to lead to the light at the end of the tunnel. And she starts to turn away and say, look, if you really need the kick in the behind, ask yourself the insipid question I've seen on a t-shirt or two. What would Wonder Woman do? So meanwhile, the scene shifts back to Mount Olympus, where we see Wonder Woman in all her power beginning to destroy Mount Olympus and set it ablaze, and temples are tumbling, and she's firing off energy blasts, and she's thinking that the witching hour will soon draw to a close with Hecate emerging triumphant. And a voice off panel says, Hecate, this is wrong. Deep down, I think you know it. You're pushing for the most offensive twist of the knife. You're going to take all of magic for yourself and doing it with one of the bodies of the world's greatest defenders, a woman who charges headfirst into strange and impossible. And you're using her to destroy the world when really all she wants to do is to save it, to save all of it. And that voice coming from off panel is Zatanna. And Zatanna says, you know, I should have trusted her. I shouldn't have thought about the possibilities of what could have gone wrong. I should have believed in Wonder Woman more and helped her more. And maybe you wouldn't have been able to push her out of her own body. So that's what I'm here to do now. So I might not be able to save my friend, but I'm sure not going to let her be or her body be what you use to destroy magic. You know, if Diana was a fool to stand up to you, then, you know, maybe I'm a fool and we're all fools, but we're going to do everything we can to stop Diana. And if that means destroying her body so that you don't win, then that's what we're going to do. We're going to kill Diana. We're going to kill Wonder Woman for her own sake. We're going to kill her to save her, to save the idea that she is. So as we turn the page, we see Diana there now with two other versions of Hecate. It's not just the maiden and the mother there, but we also see the crone in kind of an astral form, because she's the one that's in charge, right? And she's pushed these other two aspects of herself down into the collective unconscious. And they're telling Wonder Woman how they've been trapped there for years in the primordial darkness of this spiritual borderland. And the crone is bathed with bated breath for her moment to come. And the witching hour is finally here. And, you know, the crone is right. There are aspects of the magical world that must be reset. The story of magic was set on a dark path many, many years ago when Hecate first reached out to that dark upside down reflection of herself, the upside down man himself. And that path pulled the entire system toward horror. But it can't be spite that replaces it, which is what Hecate is doing by trying to recreate magic in the image of the crone, you know, for revenge, for you trapped me, you turned your back on me, and I am going to punish the world for that by recreating magic in this spiteful way. It's got to be something more and something new. And the maiden form of Hecate says, Diana, you were chosen by Hecate because she saw inside of you so much potential, the same potential that she once carried as a maiden. And there are many paths forward for you, Diana. Your shape could take many, many forms, but you've got to understand that you are forever tied to magic. You have made the tie yourself. And that's maybe more than anything, the longest lasting legacy of this story that Tynan is telling, and probably the point of telling it at all, is getting back to that magical aspect of Wonder Woman that's always kind of been there in the background. It's come a little more to the forefront different times depending on the stories that certain writers were telling or not telling, but it's never been a huge part of her character and her stories. And I think that's going to change, and I think that's a big change to the character and a change that's welcome and opens up a lot of new story possibilities. So the mother aspect of Hecate is telling Wonder Woman that even now her friends are fighting an impossible battle cry, or an impossible battle rather, using your own name as a battle cry. And magic has always been shaped by belief, and your friends believe in you, and that belief gives us an opportunity. And the story of Hecate must end, and a new story of magic must begin. So Diana's down for it, right? She's like, hey, I'm Wonder Woman, I'll do what I can, so tell me what to do. And the maiden says, you've got to hold to what is in your heart. Do what you do best. Don't let the darkness overtake you. Don't become the crone. And the mother says, Hecate's first act of magic divided it in two, right? And all the trouble spawns from that division, right? And in that moment that she sensed the darkness and that there was a dark upside down reflection of her. And all paths forward must take that into account, that there is that other half, there is that darkness. And so as the heroes are starting to attack Wonder Woman, she pauses and gasps and then says, Zatanna, sister, stand back, in a voice that's clearly Wonder Woman. And Zatanna's so surprised. She's like, Diana, is that really you? Cersei told us we'd have to kill you. She said it would be impossible. You were to take back control. And Wonder Woman says, she wasn't wrong. This pretty much feels impossible because the fire of magic is burning through me and I don't know if I can survive it, but there is something that must be done. So please stand down. This was never a battle we could win by fighting. It's a battle she's got to win by reaching Hecate, reaching the crone aspect of her. And so Wonder Woman kneels before Hecate and says, I beseech you, listen to your daughter. And Hecate is taken aback. Like, what trickery is this? How could you have taken back control? Diana says, it's no trick. And it begs Hecate, you know, you've changed aspects before and you must do it again. And Hecate says, you need to complete your destruction of Olympus. Your goddess commands you. You know, this is the final pillar. And Wonder Woman, again, I know your heart. 2/3 of you stand with me. They're resisting your control. They've told me the sad story, right? And I know how much pain you've suffered, and I know the hatred you have for this world, and you've become something predatory. But this isn't the way. You need to release your control and use your powers to heal magic. Don't tear down magic and replace it with something, you know, worse. I beg you, don't make me kill you. And that may not have been the right thing to say, because the Crone aspect says, that possibility ended many years ago, Amazon. This is what I am now and all I can ever be. And so Diana turns to Zatanna and says, I need your help. You have to use your magic. And Zatanna says, I can't. Magic is broken. Even though Hecate hasn't taken it over yet, that initial problem is still there. It's still broken. And if I use my magic, it's going to open the door to the other kind. And that's dangerous. You know, we're going to be trading one unstoppable force, this Hecate, who's about to take over magic, for another unstoppable force, the other kind. We're going to be trading this Hecate for the dark, evil, upside down reflection of her. That's not a good plan. And Diana says, I know the cost of magic, but I also know this must be done. And you can tell Zatanna is hesitant for a moment. And then she says, open the door. She's chosen to, she's probably remembering her very words she uttered earlier in this issue, where she said she should have trusted Diana more. So she does open the door, and through it, of course, comes the Upside Down Man. As Hecate calls out, foolish child, what have you done? And the voice off panel says, oh yes, I remember this power from long ago. I can taste it already. And the Upside Down Man begins to devour Hecate as she screams, and her screams echo off the marble walls of Olympus. And she had commanded her power to return to her in full to give her the edge against her ancient enemy. But the power, it had been untethered from her will. Right? She had been releasing it to change the fabric of magic. And now she doesn't have time to pull it back into herself. So Diana, still linked to Hecate, feels Hecate's agony as she's devoured, as the power of Hecate is being pulled from Wonder Woman. She feels guided by an unseen hand as she uses the final bits of Hecate's power to close the gate to the realm of the gods, and manages to escape with her friends back to Earth. And the witch mark begins to fade as she feels Hecate's death rattle echo through magic itself. And finally, as Hecate is completely devoured, the bell tolls, marking the end of the witching hour. So that's it. The witching hour is over, and the good guys won. Sort of, except to Diana's earlier point, they have traded one version of Hecate for another, in a way, right? They've allowed the Upside Down Man, the other kind, a doorway back into our world. We saw in issue 3, they had managed to shove them back. But unfortunately, it was the only way to stop Hecate, was to let them back in. And you know, Diana, she tried to appeal to Hecate's better natures, either of her other two sides, or both her other two sides that gave her all that information and told her the story of Hecate in that collective unconscious. If either one of those aspects could have, you know, exerted some control and gotten Hecate to relent, there would have been another choice, and the other kind would not have been let back into the world. So meanwhile, the next page, it's the Hall of Justice 3 days later, and Zatanna's telling Wonder Woman that Madame Xanadu is taking Rama Krishna for the time being. Ramakrishna being the goddess that lived in Nanda Parbat, which obviously is destroyed, and so she needs a new home. The necropolis and the Parliament of Trees seem like they're sticking for now, but they're starting to realize their master's gone, so they're going to have to play by the old rules if they don't want all-out war. What that means, well, I mean, will the necropolis eventually welcome Ramakrishna? Will there be able to be some kind of peace there? Like, it is kind of the heart of magic now in this universe. So I expect it to show up more on the pages of Justice League Dark and maybe some other books. And as far as the Parliament of Flowers, so Swamp Thing's going to have to learn how to work with them because they've got to give him access to the green. He is their avatar now that Hecate is gone. And he's not taking it well, according to Zatanna. Which is to say he disappeared into the Martian Rose Garden upstairs a few hours ago. Don't know when he's coming back. And Zatanna then says she's going to let Detective Chimp and Man-Bat debrief the rest of the league. And Superman's just upset he couldn't stop all those people from dying. So Diana says, you know, I know how he feels. I'm sorry for all this. And I feel like if I didn't respect the raw power of magic and believe that I could control it, then none of this would ever happen again. But she promises never to underestimate magic again. And she realizes that the other kind is now closer to our reality than they've ever been. Olympus is being devoured to them, devoured by the other kind as they speak. And Wonder Woman's gods, you know, they've long since left. So the only footing that Wonder Woman really has in the world is the footing that she can make for herself. And Zatanna likes that answer. She's actually like, you know what? That's spoken like a true magician. And what's going to come next is going to be really difficult. But, you know, our ragtag group just saved the world, saved magic from an omnipotent god. And that does count for something. And Wonder Woman says, yeah, but there's something that still bothers me. You know, I can still feel it. And Zatanna says, well, you know, it's been under my skin the last couple of days. Hecate's power was broken into 5 pieces. And so it was Witchfire, Manitou Dawn, Black Orchid, and Wonder Woman. And we kind of assumed that the fifth point, the last piece of that power, Hecate kept for herself. But that's not the case, because Hecate has been devoured, and if that were the case, then Wonder Woman wouldn't feel it, right? Because Wonder Woman doesn't have any power left, nor does Witchfire, Manitou Dawn, or Black Orchid. And if Hecate herself is gone, then all her power should be gone. But they're still able to sense Hecate's power. So that leaves someone unaccounted for. So the power that those four had must have flown into from host to host into another person, whoever that last person is. And there's no telling how powerful they could be if they knew how to tap into it, because now they've got all of Hecate's power, but without Hecate there to pull their strings and to control them, right? So the power of an omnipotent god and the ability to wield it as they see fit with nobody influencing them. Right? Sounds like it could be a pretty dangerous person. So we turn the page and we find out who it is. We're back in Aya. As we see Zatanna's thought continue from the previous page, that the other kind might not be the only real threat on the horizon. And the laughter starts quietly and then rumbles like thunder. The plan had worked better than she had imagined. How easy it had been to guide their hands to clear the path for her own ascension. She'd dreamt of this for millennia, and when the time came, she could feel the power she'd so desperately craved coursing through her body, and we see Cersei there bursting with magical energy. The old goddess of magic was dead. This is the new goddess. Reality trembled when Cersei laughed, and the fools actually believed that the witching hour had drawn to a close, but really, the true horror was yet to begin. The witching hour hasn't even really started. It was Cersei all along. Manipulating things, and I like this. I like that it's not over, that there's this seed of future turmoil and future drama and future problems, and that Cersei's at the heart of it, because I never really bought in the early issues of this, like, why was Cersei helping them? She was always a bad guy, right? And it seemed her heel turn seemed so abrupt. And I love that forced by circumstance, the heroes all had to take her at kind of at her word, and her explanation kind of made sense, but it didn't ring completely true to me. But again, in that moment, the heroes didn't have much choice, and Cersei's actions did seem to reinforce what she was saying, and that she was on the side of angels. But in fact, she wasn't on the side of the heroes, and she wasn't on the side of Hecate. She was on her own side, and she manipulated everybody to the point where she now has this incredible magical ability. So to be continued in Justice League Dark. So again, we're going to see Cersei show up as a much more formidable foe for our heroes in the future. And then obviously we still have the other kind as kind of another threat, if you will. So I don't expect things to go easy for the Justice League Dark anytime soon. So I really enjoyed this event. As I said, there were a few things about it that I thought, you know, little nits that I like to pick. Like I said, I'm not sure on the timeline. The narration might have worked better if they shuffled things around a little bit. Also, I know it is a really dense read, especially this issue. There's a lot of exposition, a lot of dialogue, and I know some people are turned off by that. But again, I kind of enjoyed it because it really kind of hammered home what was going on. It was reinforcing, and I think that that's important when you're trying to bring back such a big corner of the DCU and make sure everybody kind of understands and feels how important it actually is. And hopefully we're going to see some of those other characters we saw cameo in this issue, Madame Xanadu, Etrigan, Solomon Grundy, Eclipso, because they do have such a, they do straddle that line between superhero and supernatural so well. You know, some villains, some heroes, but they do that really well. And I feel like that's what this Justice League Dark title, that's what James Tynan wants it to do. He wants it to be really scary, but at the same time, you're straddling that world, and it's that bridge that ties in with the Justice League, which is doing such a great job of telling the story of the superhero aspect of the DC universe right now. One other thing that I'll note, and I hope that this changes in future issues of Justice League Dark, and I think it will. I think it was just hard in the context of this story for Detective Chimp and Man-Bat to really have much to do. It didn't really suit their particular skill sets, what was going on. It was kind of above their heads, especially Man-Bat. So I feel like they're very much not an afterthought in the story, but again, they just didn't have a lot to contribute. It was hard to find a place for them, I imagine, for James. So I like them both as characters. I love that James has included them in the book. He just loves Detective Chimp, and Detective Chimp, you know, being in charge of the Oblivion Bar now and having the sword that can open doorways to other dimensions, it makes complete sense. And when somebody asked James, I think it was at San Diego Comic-Con, or it might have been at New York Comic-Con. Anyway, somebody asked him about having Man-Bat on the team, and he just said, you know, it's a supernatural team. I wanted a mad scientist, so that's great. So again, I think back in the pages of the regular Justice League Dark book, I'm sure James will find room to let those characters develop and give them a chance to shine a little bit, because they were kind of underutilized in this story. But again, it's just they don't have overt magic abilities, right? That we're going to let them really have a proactive role in this story. So for me, it made sense for the story James was telling. But again, I really enjoyed the event much more than I originally thought. I wasn't even originally going to pick up the event when I first heard about it, but based on the strength of the third issue of Justice League Dark, I was like, James is killing it right now. I gotta completely, you know, pick this up. You know, I thought I'm gonna give all three Justice League, you know, books a try, and we'll see. I know they're gonna be closely tied together. The first main book, Justice League Dark, or Justice League rather, by Scott Snyder, just blew it out of the gates. It was so good, and you know, Justice League Dark first issue was good, not great, but it really built to issue three. And Odyssey, I'm still kind of, you know, let's wait and see. But I think for the most part, they're doing a really great job of bringing together the cosmic, the magic, and the superhero aspects of the DC universe. So kudos to everybody involved. And I don't know, man, based on the events of this kind of crossover that we just had and what's coming next, it might be tough. It might be a tough call for what I like better, the regular Justice League or Justice League Dark. I mean, they're so different, and that's part of what's great, that I don't have to choose. I get to read both, right? I get to read the superhero stuff in Justice League, and I get to read the supernatural / superhero stuff in Justice League Dark. And they're both just killing it. And again, we've only had two issues of Justice League Odyssey, so it's too early to say, but it does show promise. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. I want to thank you for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other coverage of pop culture, TV, movies, all that kind of good stuff. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.